scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, this hour's underway on a Tuesday, March 14th, with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, Pat Steinberg from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, and spent a lot of Monday's show talking about Jonathan Huberdeau and talking about, you know, the different pages that he and Daryl Sutter may be on at any given time, but now here's an opportunity to prove himself correct. I was going to use the term prove himself right, but that gets confusing because we're talking about the right and the left. So here's an opportunity.
We're not going down that road again, are we?
Here's an opportunity for him to prove himself correct. He feels like he should have been on the left side all year long. Didn't really understand why he spent such a long time playing the opposite wing. So if he wants to be there, and now down the stretch, that's where he's going to be. Now it's on him to be productive, right? Now it's on him to... He had 2 points on Sunday, so that's a really good start against Ottawa and assisted on a big goal and obviously scored a big goal. But now this is his opportunity to say, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. Now I'm going to go out and show you why I'm supposed to be here.
Right, because I'm sure a big part of Daryl Sutter's post-game snipe the other night about Johnny coming down the right side and burying it is the fact that he doesn't think that playing the off wing should be an excuse for the lack of production. Jonathan Huberdeau spent plenty of time on the left wing at the start of this season. The production wasn't there. Now, was he in the middle of a transition to a new team? Yes. Was he battling multiple injuries? Yes. Were there various things at play? Of course there were. But Jonathan Huberdeau was not especially productive on his left wing at the start of this season. And so, absolutely, to your point, this is his chance to prove it. You're more comfortable on the left. You're more comfortable the way you can set up the play. You're more comfortable the way you know, your vision. You feel more comfortable with the way you see the ice on the left. So now, put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. It's time for Jonathan Huberdeau to produce, and yeah, we could go through a list of things that would have to happen for the Calgary Flames to be in a playoff position when the regular season ends in 4 weeks, and one of them is absolutely Jonathan Huberdeau stepping up down the stretch.
That doesn't sound correct. Feels like there's still like 7.5 months to go until the end of the regular season.
No. I don't like correcting you. It just feels like there's 7.5 months of winter left.
That's also fair. Although today, very, very nice. I didn't walk in, but I could have if I had any modicum of time management. I could have walked in today.
I'm not ready to give credit for, you know, if it snows at night but melts the next day, It's still too much snow at this time of year.
I agree with you. You'd think that Huberdeau would be motivated to... You'd think that that would be something that would be driving him as well. Getting into the playoffs, absolutely. But you get this opportunity. You clearly have not felt comfortable on the off wing over the last number of months. So now you'd think that he'd feel motivated to go out there and prove that this is where I belong. And not just for the rest of this season, but, you know, show your coach, who you're going to be with for at least the next 2 years as it stands right now, go out and show your coach that, hey, like, I am a premier player in this league, and I should be playing more than 14 minutes a night. You should be bumping me up to 17, 18 minutes a night, and on the left side. Like, I'm just curious about what's driving Jonathan here in the final 15 games. We know that the playoffs is the primary driver, and it should be, but you also wonder if there's a little individual motivation there and kind of proven to himself, proven to his coach, proven to people on the outside that this acquisition and that record signing, that it wasn't misplaced. I'm not ready to say it was misplaced 65 games into a season or 67 games into a season, but I wonder about that motivation from Huberdeau down the stretch here.
Yeah. And let's see it twofold, and let's see the motivation, and we know what the odds are. You know, the deck is stacked against the Calgary Flames. They stacked it themselves to try to get into the playoffs. It's going to be difficult, but Jonathan Huberdeau is a guy now in his 11th season in the league who's played 26 career playoff games.
Yep.
He's been to the playoffs four times in his career, not unlike other members that we've seen of the core group here in Calgary. So let's see some motivation there. Yep. We're not expecting Jonathan Huberdeau to all of a sudden be the guy who runs an opponent through the end of the rink on the forecheck. He's not a guy that you're going to see that desperation out of in maybe the obvious ways, but let's see an uptick that shows, hey, I'm not going down without a fight here. I want to be in the playoffs. And to your point, I think there's a lot of reason for personal motivation. This season has not gone the way that Jonathan Huberdeau expected or that anyone expected from him on a personal level. But he only has to look 20 feet across the Flames locker room to see what Jacob Markstrom has done in the past 2 weeks at the tail end of a season that couldn't have gone anywhere close to the way he was expecting it to. What Jacob Markstrom, and I go back to yesterday, you and I sat here and talked about the importance of what it means, and we did this on the round table with Derek, of what it's going to mean to Jacob for next season.
Yep.
Well, it would be beneficial for Jonathan Huberdeau to go into this offseason feeling like he found his game down the stretch. And there's been nights that we've seen it, but let's see it stack up a little bit now.
And throughout all this, and we've talked a lot about Jonathan over the last 48, 72 hours or whatever the case may be, Daryl Sutter has been very quick to kind of attach him and Nazem Kadri at the hip. Pre-game on Sunday, he did, when he was talking about moving Jonathan back to the left side. He talked about how, hey, Kadri, he and Kadri are together, and then he got intrepid reporters like Wes Gilbertson to go and take a look at the record as to when Huberdeau and Kadri get a point and how the team does when they don't get a point. And it was pretty slanted one way when you went and took a look at that, right?
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I can call them up. And then the one that Sportsnet Stats came up with, because we saw it at the end of the night, Jonathan Huberdeau finishes with a goal and an assist. Nazem Kadri, two assists. Calgary Flames, 6-0. 6-0-0.
Yeah,
when both have multiple points. Now, you're not going to get that every single night, but I think the Flames have won three games. This is off the top of my head. I think the Flames have won three games when neither of those guys gets a point. It just speaks to their importance.
Yep.
It speaks to what that sort of contribution means. Obviously, it speaks to how rotten the power play has been for stretches of this season, but I don't think Daryl Sutter is out of place to be suggesting that he needs more out of those two guys specifically on the score sheet.
Well, and when you're looking at $17.5 million of your maybe flat cap being dedicated to those two guys next year, I mean, it's not such a big deal this year, because you actually are, if you're going Gaudreau and Tkachuk to Kadri and Huberdeau, you're actually saving money year over year. But next year, that no longer becomes the case, because Huberdeau's money almost doubles, going from 5.9 to 10.5. So
can I jump in here with the numbers?
What'd you get?
Just found them. And so I just found a tweet from Sportsnet Stats. So credit to them. When Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau each finish with 0 points, the Calgary Flames are 3-15-2.
Okay.
When each collect a point or more, the Calgary Flames are 16-3-5. When each collect 2+ points,
they're 6-0.
6-0.
Huh.
Now, I'd love to see the numbers for everybody. I'm sure the numbers when Tyler Toffoli gets a point are much better than when he doesn't. But I hope Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri are looking at that. This team, when we don't produce, has three victories.
Well, and again, intrepid reporter Wes Gilbertson, post-game on Sunday, you asked Nazem about that. Basically, he said, you know, you come together on a big goal, and Daryl talked about the record when you have points and don't have points. How much pressure do you put on yourself? That's what Wes asked Nazem Kadri on Sunday. And I thought Nazem gave a really interesting response to it.
Sometimes, you know, we put a little too much pressure on ourselves, and, you know, because you want to be the guys that come through for your team, and you know, get on the score sheet and help your team win at the end of the day. So, you know, there's a lot of accountability between us two and us three specifically with our line. So, you know, for us, it's just, you know, you're getting those opportunities, and that's something we really got to focus on. It's, you know, when the opportunities stop coming, that's when maybe you should be a little concerned. But for us, you know, we've had a lot of chances, a lot of, you know, a lot of ozone time, and it's just really, if you stick with it, it's just a matter of time before, you know, it starts going in for you.
So that was Nazem Kadri, and right at the beginning where he said, yeah, sometimes maybe we put a little bit too much pressure on ourselves in that regard, and yet at the same time, there should be pressure on them to produce. But I just like Nazem's response to that, and he was able to at least publicly kind of keep it pretty even keel when it comes to the type of pressure that they might have on them to produce on a nightly basis.
Yeah, and you know, what he talked about was opportunities. You know, they feel like they're getting scoring chances. Hours earlier, Daryl Sutter had told us after morning skate, he doesn't feel like those two specifically have been spending enough time in the offensive zone. So, you know, there's a little he said going on there, mm-hmm. probably. But I thought it was a really insightful answer from Nazem Kadri in terms of the amount of pressure that they've put on themselves. And we can only imagine what it would be like to be parachuted into a Canadian market, into a, you know, a passionate market like Calgary as the prized offseason acquisitions. You know, Jonathan Huberdeau comes in one of the biggest blockbuster trades in Flames franchise history.
Yep.
Sorry, one of the biggest blockbuster trades in NHL history.
Yeah.
And suddenly is signed to the largest contract in franchise history.
Yep.
Nazem Kadri comes off a Stanley Cup run, signs with a team, and suddenly, what's all the talk? Now the Calgary Flames are the Stanley Cup favorites. Well, there's a little bit of pressure there, right? Yeah. I remember Jonathan Huberdeau making an interesting comment, and this is going way back to preseason training camp time, and he talked about the fact that he knows all season people are going to be comparing how many points he has to how many points Matthew Tkachuk has. He's not winning that race right now.
Nope.
And he's not winning it this season. He has 44. Matthew Tkachuk is doubling him at this point. Now, I think, and this is easier said than done, but I think what becomes important is that Jonathan Huberdeau not get caught up in that big picture right now. If he's going to help this team make an improbable playoff push, he can't be thinking about the, you know, best case scenario is I finish this season with 60 points, and that's still a miserable season by my standards. It's got to get really little picture right now. Again, that's easy for me to sit here and say on the radio, but that's going to be the challenge, and it's going to be the same for Nazem Kadri. He's got 49 points. He's not coming close to his career numbers that he put up last season. It can't be about that right now. If these guys can be consistently productive down the stretch, that's the best chance the Calgary Flames have.
Yep, agreed. And it's something that they absolutely are. I don't think they make the playoffs if they don't get these guys being, like, I'm quite confident that if they are offensive drivers down the stretch and they are what they were against Ottawa, where I thought they were really good, I thought they were really good against Dallas last week, if they're that, then I think this team has a chance, a good chance to make it interesting. If they're not, I think they're done. Doesn't matter how good Jacob Markstrom plays. Doesn't matter how well Rasmus Anderson plays or what Michael Backlund's line does. If that line is not a consistent driver, I don't think they're doing it. They're a team that's based on depth, and those two guys are a big part of their depth, a big part of their high-end depth. And if you're a team based on depth and the top of your depth chart isn't giving you consistent good nights, you really don't have a chance. And so, yeah, I absolutely think that this is a scenario where they need to be those guys in the final 15 games. And if they're not, you might as well say goodbye to the postseason.
Yeah, and we're in that stage of the season now, and the Calgary Flames are in enough of a pickle that you need all your star guys rowing the boat, or you're in big trouble. Because I could not agree with you more. Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri are beyond Jacob Markstrom, for me, the two most important guys in terms of if there's any way that they're going to get in, those might be the two most important guys beyond Jacob Markstrom. Mm-hmm. That being said, they can't have Tyler Toffoli go ice cold on them all of a sudden. They can't have Rasmus Anderson, whether he's playing with Noah Hanifin or Mackenzie Weegar, go, you know, he can't be less than the workhorse that he's been for this team down the stretch. The predicament, and that's the word I keep using for it, it's about as polite as I can be about how they sit in the standings. The predicament that the Calgary Flames are in right now, they kind of need all their star guys in these last 15 or they're in big trouble.
Yep. Couple of texts, 960, 960. This from Murray, who says, Jonathan Huberdeau has, if I can open the text, I would be able to tell you. I remember the first part of it, and now it's not letting me open the text. There we go. Huberdeau's played most of this season on his off wing, and this is only getting attention now. Well, it's getting attention because he's moved back to the other side, and it's getting attention because the agent's been a little bit more vocal about it over the last number of weeks as well. That's why it's getting more attention here.
And when did he move over? Because when... The way I remember it, because I was in San Jose on the road trip when it was the trip that they stayed in San Jose for two. Yep. And that's when Milan Lucic got moved up to that line.
And Huberdeau was on the right then because Lucic only plays the left.
Okay, so I thought I remembered Lucic starting on the right. But I'd have to go back and check my notes on that. So the early...
Something about that rings a bell to me too now that you mentioned.
The earliest that Huberdeau moved over to the right side was about December 20th.
So it would have been late December, yeah.
Although I think he played on the left. I really do think when Milan Lucic was promoted to that line, Milan Lucic started on the right.
On the right side?
Now I'd have to go back and maybe someone with a better memory can correct me, but just to clarify for those who are out there wondering, well, how long has he been playing his off wing? It either started when Milan Lucic got thrown in that mix, or it would have started later when Jacob Pelche, trying to remember all the different combos we've seen. But
here I found a tweet from Wes Gilbertson from January 3rd.
Verified?
Where, yes, there is a check mark.
Impressive. Very impressive.
Lucic on the right. So it looks like they started Lucic on the left, then tried him on the right, and then went back to the left on that line. So they did try Lucic for a few games at least on the right side there.
And not disputing the text, because the point is valid. It was a lengthy run on the right side.
It's been since January, like mid-January at the earliest. So that's a couple of months.
Yeah, definitely leading into the All-Star break,
yep.
he had been bumped over to the right, to the bye and the All-Star. So it's been a while. And I think, based on what we've heard in the last couple of days, the frustration had mounted playing the right side. So fascinated to see what his response is. Now, I really liked his game on Sunday against the Senators, although the Senators were awful. So
looked like a team that played the night before and then lost an hour and then lost another hour. Like they looked like they were waving the white flag early in the second period.
Some of their when if we're sitting doing sports talk radio in Ottawa today, some of their star players the other night were absolutely dreadful.
Brady Tkachuk may have played the worst game he's ever played that night.
I heard Bud Light sales were down too.
It's true, because he was playing and not in the stands.
Too bad.
This reads, who is Huberdeau, superstar left wing or playoff bust like Tkachuk? Well, his playoffs have not been widely recognized as strong. So that is an area that he's trying to maybe exercise a little bit. I'd like to find out. I'd like to find out whether or not he can be a playoff performer in Calgary. They got to get there this year. So I'd like to be given that opportunity to find out that year. It'd be nice to, this year rather, it'd be nice to see whether or not he can be a guy who raises his game come postseason time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have less question, and maybe that's not the right way to put it, because I do think Jonathan Huberdeau can be a guy who is impactful in the playoffs, but I know already that Mackenzie Weegar and Nazem Kadri could be those guys that you really lean on in physical, intense playoff series, and so there's a lot to like about the way the additions would shape up for that kind of hockey. But
you got to get there.
The only way we're talking about it in 4 weeks is if they go on a hell of a run here. Like the number I keep hearing in the Flames room is 95 points.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're kind of hearing the same. And so they've got 15 games left and they're looking at needing to win a dozen of them.
Yep. To get to 95. Yeah. Absolutely. Mike writes, if we think about how most games have played out this season, the Backlund line has generally helped keep the games close, but this team has needed either the Kadri line or the Huberdeau line to make a play and make the difference. But they've been inconsistent and dependable for most of this season. That's why the team has lost a lot of close games this year. There's no doubt about it. The number one reason why they have been inconsistent, the number one reason why their one-goal record is as mediocre as it is, the number one reason why they've been in so many games decided by just one goal has been because their best players have, through 67 games, not been consistently their best guys. The guys that are paid and expected to be the very top drivers haven't been at Kadri, Huberdeau, Lindholm to a lesser extent, but Lindholm
early
has
in
been,
the season for sure.
And Markstrom. Those are the four guys that, if you're saying to me, the four guys that I point to right off the top as the guys who drive this bus, all four of them have had down seasons based on what their expectations are and what we know they're capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would have loved to add Andrew Mangiapane's name to the list of guys who should be driving the bus this season. And that hasn't turned out to be the case either. So I would like to put him on that list. I'm not sure he was looked at internally as a guy who was going to absolutely drive the bus, but he's a guy that I think we all had high expectations for 100%. As well, who's fallen short of them. Let me really quick, before I get roasted on the text line, correct my own rotten math. 11 wins in the last 15 to get to 95.
Because they're at 73, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's still 11 of 15.
And it might not be enough.
Heck of a run.
95, the way things are shaping up, probably does it. But you'd be leaving some to chance there as well.
And finally, from Ray in Calgary, in my opinion, Huberdeau gets too much of the blame for this team's failures. I feel Kadri has struggled as Huberdeau's center. He doesn't pass or move the puck in the offensive zone, doesn't skate hard when the puck's turned over. Too many shifts, he's not noticeable. I do agree that Kadri has really, I thought he was good, very good against Ottawa. I thought he was really good in that game against Dallas and was one of their better players on the road in Minnesota. But if you take a look at the last month and a half or so, he's been one of Calgary's guys that has struggled the most and one of the guys that they need the most from who has struggled the most of late.
Yeah, and this is a topic that we could, you know, go until puck drop tonight on, but I'm not sure those two that we've seen joined at the hip are a perfect fit.
I'm with you.
You know, we've seen Jonathan Huberdeau guilty multiple times of trying to force passes. That comes with the game for any sort of elite level distributor, but when Jonathan Huberdeau's off, he's forcing passes that aren't there. Nazem Kadri, to me, has tried to force plays that aren't there. He's a guy who gets caught trying to stick handle around multiple guys when it's just not there.
Yep.
When he's at his best, that's not the case, but when Nazem Kadri's having a bit of an off night, you see him cough it up a few times at the offensive blue line.
100%. It's Pat and Wes with you. This is Flames Talk. We're coming at you from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Wes from Post Media, and it's the Coyotes on Tuesday night from the embarrassing Mullet Arena. That's what that's how I have started to phrase it, because I think it's embarrassing that the NHL is playing in front of 4,000 people 41 times a year. But you know what? They don't care what I think. They are very committed to that market, so have at it. It's a Coyotes team featuring two of Calgary's former top defense prospects in Yusuf Välimäki and now Connor Mackey, both expected to be in the lineup Tuesday night versus the Flames. Both started training camp as members of the team. Välimäki was claimed on waivers just before the start of the regular season. To keep Mackey,
who is also waiver eligible, who then got into not even two handfuls of games the rest of the way, and he was traded at the deadline to the Coyotes along with Brett Ritchie, offensive superstar. have you seen the numbers?
Ritchie family juggernaut.
He's playing on the top line there. Like
he went 1-2-3 the other night, didn't he?
I know. It's like, good on you, Brett. But, of course, Mackey was the other part of that trade that sent Troy Stetcher and Nick Ritchie back to the Flames. How do we reconcile this one when you really start to think about it? Because I think you need to take a larger picture view of the situation.
Yeah.
At the time, in a vacuum, choosing Valimaki over Mackey made sense because at the time, in that three-week vacuum, Mackey had outplayed Valimaki and you couldn't keep both of them. So you had to expose one to waivers. You chose Yusso and he got claimed. Sure. But I think when you take that vacuum away and you take a look at the way Yusso had been handled the prior two seasons, then you can start to maybe be a little more critical as to the way the Flames handled a former first round pick. And then you got the Mackey situation. You kept him away from waivers. You went out of your way to keep him on the team. And then what, he only played 9 games or 8 games or whatever it was in the NHL. You never put him on waivers so that he could play. You never even gave him a conditioning stint opportunity to play in the American League. I think it's fair to say that they weren't handled perfectly in either situation, and now neither of them are with the organization anymore.
Yeah, and it's really easy to criticize today, and it's fair game to criticize today. We sat in the lower bowl at the Saddle Dome where we sit for practices and morning skates when the Flames had to make a decision on who would be the last of the roster cuts on the blue line. And I'm sure you were sitting there as well. I remember the conversations about the fact it had to be Yusso Valimaki going on waivers.
Mm-hmm.
He had been outplayed by a country mile by Connor Mackey and by Michael Stone during training camp. It sort of seemed like an inevitability that it was time that they had to put him on waivers and see what happened. Now, if we had a bug on the wall in Brad Treliving's office, his biggest concern at that point, as they discussed whether they should waive Yusso Valimaki and try to get him to the minors, was exactly what's happening right now. He gets claimed by a defense-starved team that is able to give him an opportunity, and credit to Yusso, he's taken advantage of it. You know, that you run through who they're playing on their blue line, it is as thin as you could imagine. But Yusso Valimaki is essentially their number one guy right now.
Yep.
He's played 20 plus minutes in 19 straight games. The other night he had 2 assists and played 25 minutes against the Minnesota Wild.
Yep.
Now, was it going to happen here in Calgary? I don't know. I don't think so. Daryl Sutter's laundry list of things he didn't like about Yusso Valimaki's game would take us into the next segment.
Yep.
I'm sure a few years from now, Yusso Valimaki will probably admit that some of the things Daryl Sutter was harping on eventually helped him become the player he is. But Yusso Valimaki left Calgary with no confidence, feeling like he hadn't got an opportunity, and feeling like, thank goodness I'm going to go somewhere where they might see me for what I think I can be in this league.
Yep.
And the Calgary Flames definitely need to take a hard look at how it got to that point.
And that's a really good way of putting it, is that I think, and I think it's hard in the moment to necessarily know what's happening, but I take a look at, you know, so Yusso gets hurt, and look, the injuries are nobody's fault. They're completely out of anybody's control. He gets hurt in the summer of 2019, and as a result, misses that entire 19-20 season. And then he was getting close to coming back, and the season got canceled. Didn't play in the bubble, and so you go ahead to the next year. And he was able to go get those games in Finland. He was a great player in Finland's top league. Comes over, and I know that there was a feel that, you know, that didn't really feel like he was playing all the time under Jeff Ward, but He kind of was getting thrown all over the place. One night he was anchoring the number one power play. Another night he was playing 8 minutes long. Then Daryl comes in, and there was a bunch of healthy scratches down the stretch. Remember, he and Dylan Dubé got healthy scratched multiple times in the back half of that 56-game season. And Daryl...
And a very public lambasting that came with it.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of said that this organization... kind of gifts opportunities to young players when they haven't earned it is basically the message that Daryl Sutter threw out there on multiple occasions. And I think that that tough love approach that he uses with, I think, every young player, I think it works with Dylan Dubé. I really do. I think Dylan is the type of personality that deals with it, that it motivates him, that he can kind of, he's got a switch that he can turn it off. And it's not that he's not an emotional guy. It's not that he doesn't care. It's just that I think that that approach is okay with him. I don't think it works the same way with everybody, and I don't think it worked with Uso, and I think it damaged confidence, and I think it led to, I think it turned into an untenable situation. And I get it. Your coach has got very, very defined expectations of what he wants from every player, and he's going to be even harder on young players because he feels that's how you get to the point where you can meet those expectations. But I also think it's fair to say that that approach didn't work with Uso, and as a result, you lost the first round pick for nothing, and here he is having a really good time in Arizona. And so I think it's okay to be critical of saying that, and of how they handled Uso over those couple of years, and at the same time, because of that, when they made the decision to put Uso on waivers, they kind of led to being in that situation. They were not blameless in that situation being thrust upon them, and yet at the time, in a bubble or in a vacuum, it was the right decision to choose Mackey over Valimaki.
Yeah, and if they had have gone the other direction, I don't think we'd be sitting here talking about a Uso Valimaki who was playing 18 important minutes a night for the Calgary Flames. I think that's an important part to remember. If they said, you know what, Connor Mackey outplayed him in training camp, but Uso Valimaki is a former first-round pick. He's a guy who we feel has more offensive upside. You know, here's all the reasons why we're going to stick with him. We've invested a lot in him, so we're going to keep him. Let's put Connor Mackey on waivers. Okay, Connor Mackey, as you said, had played a couple handfuls of games. I don't think we'd be sitting here if Uso Valimaki was never waived talking about a guy who had played more than about that same number.
Agreed.
Games.
Agreed.
And so maybe it needed to get to this point. It certainly did for Uso, but you have to wonder how it could have been handled differently or what could have transpired differently. Dylan Dubé had a little more time in the NHL under his belt. He had a little more probably internal proof to lean on that, hey, I belong in this league. I'm not sure that Uso Valimaki and Connor Mackey came to the Saddle Dome every day feeling like their coach thought they belonged in this league. And that's got to be tough.
Agreed. And that's a fair way of putting it. Wes and Pat with you. We're coming at you on this hour of Flames Talk from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Do you have cracks in your walls, floors, or ceilings? Visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. They are all things basement-y.
Hey, it's Haley Salvian from The Athletic. For a look at the latest on your Calgary Flames and NHL news, go click and subscribe to the Hockey Central 960 podcast. While you're there, please rate and review the show.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time for a Tuesday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Upgrade your current Mercedes-Benz to a 2022 model with a 2% additional reduction. Drive over to Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg with you. Wes Gilbertson of Post Media and other voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, it's the Arizona Coyotes on Tuesday night, a Coyotes team that is well below the Flames in the standings, a Coyotes team that is not going to the postseason. You can write that one in pen. We know that the Flames have not excelled against teams in this position this year. How many mulligans do they have left against bad teams? Or maybe that's unfair. How many mulligans do they have left against teams well below them in the standings?
Well, it's a tough question to answer, Pat, because we don't know what the Jets are going to do, what the Predators are going to do, and how the Flames are going to fare in games against teams that are sitting in a Stanley Cup playoff spot. So if you look at their remaining 15 games, they've got, two, four, six games left against playoff teams. You've got two against the Golden Knights, two against the Kings, one against the Stars, and one against the Jets. And not that this is how it's going to go, but let's say they split with the Golden Knights and split with the Kings, lose to the Stars and beat the Jets, which obviously they have to. And then you look at the teams that are outside of a playoff spot right now. They've got two against the Sharks, two against the Ducks, two against the Canucks, one against the Blackhawks, and tonight's game against the Coyotes. You're probably going to have to win the vast majority of those games. You probably have to win that game against the Predators because right now you're tied with them points-wise and they've got a few games in hand. I could see them splitting against the Canucks and maybe the Sharks, but you've got to beat the Coyotes tonight. You've definitely got to beat the Blackhawks. You can't let them sweep the season series. And you should probably beat the Ducks in the last two games, although they played a terrible game and lost 3-1 to them last Friday night. So, you know, it's really tough to say. I guess the easy answer would be not many, if any, if that makes sense.
When we start talking mulligans, I feel like I'm on the first tee with Vickers and he's got about four extra pinnacles in his pocket.
Gold, not, pinnacle golds, or just regular pinnacles?
Poor guy's not here to defend himself.
Whatever he can find in the woods, he'll use. I think the answer has to be zero. And I wouldn't confuse that necessarily with they can't lose a game to one of those teams, but it's got to be one of those games that you deserve to win. We can't see any more duds against teams that are below them in the stand, however you want to put it. To quote Mackenzie Weegar, we can't see them
bleep the bed
anymore against teams that are in the Bedard sweepstakes. And so is there going to be a night, I think, Derek, you listed off about eight against non-playoff teams to have the right number there?
Nine,
okay. Like, is there going to be a night that you maybe get goalied by some guy that nobody outside of the AHL has heard of until recently? It's possible, but a mulligan in the sense of a game that you just didn't show up with 15 left and your precarious position,
yep,
you can't have them.
That's a good way of putting it. That's kind of exactly where I am. They can lose games. Sure. They're not going to win all 15. They can afford to lose a game against a team below them if they go out and they play well, and if they get goalied, or it's just like, I think it's the duds like the Anaheim game, or Derek, you mentioned the Chicago games, especially the Chicago home game, the Detroit games. You know, there have been absolute stinkers against the Columbus game on the road. Like, you can go on and on and on about some of the really bad games against teams that are well below them and the standings have gone this year. If you lose that game and it's because the opposing goalie is the clear number one star, okay. Or if you lose that game because they just played a hell of a game and they elevated and played up to their competition, but you know what? You played a pretty good game too. I think that's different, but it's the duds and the absolute ugly outings that we've seen against those teams. They've got zero of those left because not only do you not get 2 points that night, but you also, it just adds more and more to the volume level on the outside and just more and more of the questions from us about why can't you do it and why isn't it coming together. The less of those questions and the less of that talk on the outside that you can have in the final 15 games, the better if you've got any chance of pulling this thing off.
Let me ask you guys a question. Maybe you've done the math, maybe you haven't. How many points do you think it's going to take to get in?
I've heard multiple players, and so this isn't math-based, but multiple guys in the Flames locker room have referred to the number 95 with me. 95 points is sort of the number, you know, the target on the board. They're at 73 with 15 games to go. So some combination, whether it's 11-4 or however you want to break it down, that's what they're looking at internally.
And that sounds
you're on the same number, Pat?
Yeah, it sounds about right. I'm just doing the quick math on where the Jets are. So they're at a 589, 590, which would be, what's 82 times 2? 164. So I don't know the math, but it sounds around like 95 points. I don't have enough time to do it on the fly, but it sounds like around 95 points is the pace you're going to need to be on to get there when it's all said and done.
Okay, so if that's the case, and that sounds about right, a little bit lower
actually,
than
the
usual.
Actually, the Jets are on pace for, I finally figured out how to do the math in my head. I'm like, what if I do this or that? Okay, I did it. They're on pace for between 96 and 97 points. So that's what the Jets are on pace for as the lowest seeded team right now in the West. So 96
okay,
or 97.
Perfect. Okay, perfect. I like that number for this reason. So we talked about, how many mulligans do the Flames have left? I say not many, if any. So I did that breakdown of their games against teams currently in a playoff spot and teams not currently in a playoff spot. So if they take care of business in the sense that they split with the Golden Knights, split with the Kings, lose to the Stars, and defeat the Jets, and then they sweep the 9 games against the non-playoff teams, that would get them to 97 points. Now, could you sweep the Golden Knights or sweep the Kings and beat the Stars? Sure, but they've got to start to take care of business against these non-playoff teams. It's been one of their big Achilles heels this season. You know, to their credit, and this is one of the reasons why I still believe that if they get in, they could do some damage. They've been better against good teams than they have been against bad teams this season. They're 16-12-8 versus playoff teams. That's a 543 point percentage. They're 14-12-5 against non-playoff teams, a 532 point percentage. So they've got to get that point percentage against non-playoff teams up. They don't necessarily have to sweep those 9 games, but they probably have to win at least 7 or 8 and maybe pick up a point in one of the games they lose.
What I'm kind of looking for tonight, and it goes beyond playing a team that they should beat based on everything, based on the talent level they have, based on the standings, etc. What I'm really looking for is just backing up what was another good game. You know, everyone knows I'm nutty about golf, and they talk often in golf about how difficult it is to back up a good round. With the, you know, the sentiment being that everyone at the highest level has the skill to shoot a really good round, but what differentiates the best players is the consistency, the ability to back it up. And I realize we're comparing apples to oranges, but what the Calgary Flames have failed miserably at this season is backing up wins. They've won back-to-back games 3 times since the new year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that too often is backing up a win with a loss or an overtime loss. And so it's one thing to look big picture, and you have to with where the Flames are at right now, and say, well, they're going to need to win 11 or 12. What I'm really curious about tonight is just backing up what they did on Sunday. And that would go for whoever they were playing against. That's what's going to show me what sort of fight might be left in this team in terms of making an improbable run.
Yep.
Yeah, let's hope they back up a good game better than I backed up my personal best round of 68 in the second round of the Prentice Greens Club Championships last summer with an 80 playing in the final group in the final round. I didn't back it up very well. I choked.
That is poorly backed up, Willsy. Yeah, poorly backed up.
Yeah.
Don't do that if you're the Flames. Don't do that.
Well, I try not to.
Hey,
yeah.
great round, though. Both of them, actually, by my standards. But
I wasn't playing Pinnacles. Maybe that's why. Only TaylorMade's for me.
Pinnacle Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, and Pat Steinberg with you on our Daily Flames roundtable on this Tuesday. We saw Dylan Dubé on to a line, back into the top 9 with Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri in Sunday's win over the Ottawa Senators. He didn't have a point when it was all said and done, but I thought he looked good. I thought he brought some speed to that line, but how do we feel, and what do we think about Dubé on the right side of those two guys?
Well, one of the things I love about Dylan Dubé is that he can play up and down your lineup, as we've seen. He's played on three of the four lines this season. And actually, maybe all four lines. That back line's been together so long, I kind of forget who was playing there before. But I'm pretty sure he played on that line and maybe on both wings on that line earlier in the season. And he's also played on the Lindholm line, the Kadri line, and he was even playing on the fourth line with Lewis. Playing center on that line. Lewis is on his right, Lucic on his left, not that long ago. So, you know, that versatility, I think, has come in really handy for the Flames. Dubé's having a career year with 38 points. He's on pace for 47, one goal away from equaling his career high of 18, on pace for 21. But, you know, he has stumbled a little bit offensively of late, goalless and pointless in six. But I thought he looked good playing on the right side of that line. And the other thing that he did by moving up into that spot was allow the Flames to slide. And I don't know if you guys have heard that this happened, but they moved Jonathan Huberdeau from right wing to left wing last game.
Oh, tell me more about that. That seems interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I wish someone had mentioned that to me. I did some digging, and I was able to come up with that in the last couple of days. But no, I mean, Huberdeau talked about being more comfortable on the left. It's where he's spent the vast majority of his NHL career. It's where he played last season when he set an NHL record for most assists by a left winger with 85 and put up a career best 115 points, finishing in second in the Art Ross Trophy race. So really, it's a win-win for me because Dubé gets back into the top six or top nine where he belongs. He's not a fourth-line player, in my opinion. And you slide Huberdeau from the right to the left, and he feels more comfortable. So I think it's a line that could be a long-term fit for the Flames. You've got three guys with skill. As you pointed out, Pat, Dubé brings some more pace to that line, certainly in comparison to the guy who was playing on it before in Nick Ritchie. And Dylan's 200-foot game is a lot better now than I think it's been at any point in time in his career. So even when he's not scoring goals and producing points, he can do a lot of things to help the team win hockey games. So I've liked him really wherever he's played this season. But I do think that putting him on the right on that line with Kadri and Huberdeau could be something that we see potentially for the rest of the regular season. And who knows, maybe even moving into next season.
I think there's a potential fit there for sure. And I certainly agree that Dylan Dubé was not correctly cast as a fourth liner, that he can have more impact in your top nine. But I would throw this out there, and I know we don't have a lot of time to dig into it. They need more offensive pop from Andrew Mangiapane as this stretch run goes on.
Yeah,
I know that third line's been really good, but I'd sort of like to see 88 in that spot and just see what it looks like.
I do think, to that point, you could put Wes or Derek or me with Backlund and Coleman, and it would still be a good line. Maybe not quite as good, especially if it were me. But
I disagree.
But I just...
I'm a right-handed shot, though. That's valuable.
I am as well.
Can you play the left side, though?
No chance. I can't even stick handle on my natural wing.
Can I hit the net off the rush? No. No, I cannot. That's harder. That's harder than it is. That's harder than it looks, friends. I just think, guys, the getting Dubé back into the top nine was really the only thing that mattered to me. I just, miscast is a really good way of putting it. I'll be really short and sweet on this, but that's where Dylan Dubé belongs. He would never say it, but I do think it hurt him a little bit that he got demoted there for three games. He didn't belong there. He is a top nine forward on this team. He's one of the most consistent offensive players on this team this year. And so getting him back on that line or on the Lindholm line or wherever he ends up, I think is where he belongs.
Pat, you make a really interesting point, though, about Andrew Mangiapane, who goes into tonight's game. Oh, well, I'll give you credit for it anyway.
Okay.
Mangiapane goes into tonight's game pointless in nine and goalless in 10. Which is pretty hard to believe. And then the guy on the other side of that line, Blake Coleman, is goalless and pointless in five. And then their centerman, Michael Backlund, who we all believe is having the best year of his career, you know, he was goalless and pointless in six prior to picking up 3 points in the last two games. So that line was playing at a really, really high level. They're still playing well, but you're right. They need more offense certainly from Mangiapane and to a lesser extent from Coleman. So I do wonder if those guys continue to struggle offensively, if they would consider breaking up that line, which has been their best line for 2 or 3 months now. And maybe you do swap Mangiapane and Dubé just to give a couple of lines a different look. But we'll see. Maybe everybody gets back on track against the Coyotes tonight. It's interesting. The last time the Flames played the Coyotes were the hottest team in the league with a 9-game point streak. Flames snapped that with a 6-3 win back on February 22nd. Well, the Coyotes have another 5-game point streak in the go. So we'll see if they can snap that and if some guys can get right offensively with a win here tonight.
Thank you, Willsie.
Okay, see you soon.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. There's your Tuesday Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Upgrade your current Mercedes-Benz to a 2022 model with a 2% additional reduction. Drive over to Mercedes-Benz Country Hills minutes from the Calgary Airport. Steinberg and Wes along with you as we continue along. A few texts for you at 960-960. This from Brent in Northwest Calgary. Flames have a winning percentage of 53.8%. They have not shown consistent improvement over recent games. Save and goal. Goalies can't score. The Flames cannot get into the playoffs. Head for the bottom. That's from Brent in Northwest Calgary. Not feeling the miracle vibes. There's no miracle water. That vial of miracle water that you can place by that toll-free call at 4:30 in the morning does not exist for Brent in Northwest Calgary. And Mike says, guys, the season's over. If the Preds and Jets keep winning, then it's over. Both teams have the tiebreaker, and both teams aren't going 500 to finish the season. Jumping over one team is one thing, but two teams, no way. And yes, the Preds are absolutely a stalking horse in this conversation because they're tied with three fewer games played. They have a clearer path to the playoffs right now, at least standings-wise, as opposed to Calgary. Roster-wise, maybe that's different, but standings-wise, they're in a better spot than Calgary is as well. Yes, the math remains daunting, and if we're talking on April 13th about this team getting set for round one, we'll be talking about one hell of a miracle run that they put together.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely possible. I think, you know, both teams have certainly enough flaws that the Jets and Predators could go 500 down the stretch. But if the Calgary Flames don't apply a whole ton of pressure, it's not going to matter one way or the other.
We will wrap up this hour with Pat and Wes on our Flames Talk Best Bets, brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only, 18+. Play responsibly. We went 1-1 to start the week, which I think we've gone 1-1 on Mondays for the last 19 weeks in a row, and we did again. Nathan MacKinnon hit. He went over 4.5 shots. John Tavares did not. He goes under 3.5 shots. So we went 1-1 to start the week. I've got three for you on a Tuesday, two of them in the Flames-Arizona game. You have to go over 33.5 shots for Connor Ingram in net for the Coyotes, right? I mean,
saves?
Over 33.5 saves, rather. Yeah, shots, that would be tough. Saves, yes.
I think so. He's going to see a lot of rubber.
Andre Tourney even said pregame on Tuesday morning, well, I know how this game's going to go. They're going to get a lot of shots on our net, and we're going to get a whole lot less. That was literally what head coach Andre Tourney of the Coyotes said prior to this game. So I'm going to take Connor Ingram over 33.5 saves. I'm also going to take Tyler Toffoli over 2.5 shots. And then one more elsewhere. I've got Jason Zucker of the Penguins over 2.5 shots. They take on Montreal on the second half of back-to-back. So over 2.5 shots for Zucker, over 2.5 shots for Toffoli, over 33.5 saves for Connor Ingram. There we go.
I hope that tip from the Coyotes coach doesn't count as insider trading or something.
Andre, what are you doing? Giving me all this insider information.
I hope he's not trying to lead you astray.
He could be. A little misdirection. Our producers this hour have been Cam and Taylor, Wes Gilbertson from Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on the hour. That'll wrap us up on our Flames Talk Best Bets. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only, 18+. Play responsibly.